With you on this afternoon on the National Intel Report, and filling in today again for John Stadtmiller. And I believe John is expected to return to his favorite position, his microphone, Monday at this same time, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right, Paul? Yes, he said yes. Yes, he believes so. Well, we're still in the midst of that drive, that pledge drive. We'll tell you a little bit about it later on again today. For first-time listeners. However, today, as promised, we have with us from England, with us on the line, the author of several books. His latest book, The War on Truth, 9/11 Disinformation and the Anatomy of Terrorism. His name is Nafiz Mossadegh Ahmed, and let me just tell you a little bit about him. Nafiz provides the most comprehensive and controversial critique of the government's official version of what happened on 9/11. In this new analysis, he doubles the data and investigates the World Wide Web of terrorist networks across space and time. Deconstructing the findings of the 9/11 Commission report and the Joint Congressional Inquiry, he exposes disturbing liaisons between American, British, European intelligence and al-Qaeda operatives in the Balkans, Caucasians, North Africa, Mideast, Central Asia, and Asia Pacific. Liaisons linked not only to 9/11, but also to prior terrorist attacks, including the 93 World Trade Center bombing and the 98 U.S. Embassy bombings. And he, of course, is executive director of the Institute for Policy Research and Development in England, and the best-selling author of The War on Freedom, How and Why America Was Attacked, September 11, 2001. That won him the Naples Prize, Italy's most prestigious literary award. He has a first-class master's degree in contemporary war and peace studies from the University of Sussex, where he is currently a PhD candidate in international relations. A regular political commentator on BBC Radio, Ahmed has been named a global expert on war, peace, and international affairs by the Freedom Network of the International Society for Individual Liberty in California. And his latest book is Behind the War on Terror, Western Secret Strategy and the Struggle for Iraq. Today, we're talking with him on the War on Truth, 9/11. When we come back, we'll introduce him and your calls. I'm Rick Adams.
Are you one of the millions who have trouble waking up every morning? Hit the snooze a few too many times? Need that morning cup of coffee to get you started? Why not put a little spice in your morning with Gano Cafe? Gano Cafe, a healthy coffee, gives you energy and vigor, increases your focus and mental clarity. Gano Cafe helps the body heal itself, strengthen the immune system, and waste elimination for detoxification. If you're a coffee drinker, you won't believe the wonderful taste of this great coffee. Ganoderma, commonly known as the reishi mushroom, has been utilized in Chinese medicine for over 2,000 years. Also known as the longevity herb, miraculous king of herbs, it's more powerful than ginseng and has much lower caffeine and acid. To get your cup of great-tasting coffee, go to healthycoffeeonline.com or call 1-888-841-6055. That's 1-888-841-6055.
Fight Father Time with Cocoon GH. This advanced growth hormone spray delivers impressive results. Listen to what 51-year-old Gail Contax experienced while on Cocoon GH.
My eyesight was failing. My skin was sagging. I was losing muscle tone and my bones and joints were aching. I initially got started on a product called Ultimate HGH. I felt a little more energy for the first few weeks, but then I began to feel tired again. Then I heard an ad on Cocoon GH and gave a call. I learned that Ultimate HGH isn't even growth hormone. I started using Cocoon GH and the first thing I noticed was my aches and pains went away. After another few weeks, my energy came up, as did my strength and endurance. I'm getting a better night's sleep and waking up feeling rested. My muscle tone and my eyesight both improved after 1 month. My sex drive got stronger, and much to my surprise, my menopausal symptoms went away and my period came back. I'm impressed beyond belief. Thanks, Cocoon Nutrition.
Satisfaction guaranteed. Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325.
Can you grow your own nutrition on a shelf indoors in 10 days? Wheatgrass juice is live superfood, the richest nutritional liquid known to man, packed with amino acids, living enzymes, and over 100 elements. 2 ounces of juice have the same nutrition as 3 pounds of Choice Garden produce. Call 1-877-699-4328. That's 1-877-MY-WHEAT. The stamina, healing, blood building, weight control, and cleansing are just the beginnings of what you will reap from pennies worth of grain. For the book, seed, and the beautiful stainless steel hand crank wheatgrass juicer for $150 plus shipping. No monthly pills, no monthly bills. This is real self-sufficiency. Go to AustinWheatgrass.com or call toll-free 1-877-MY-WHEAT. That's 1-877-699-4328. And thank you for your support of our labors and of the RVN Network.
For Real Talk Radio, you're listening to the National Intel Report with your host, John Stadtmiller.
Okay, we are here, and Rick Adams, of course, filling in today for John as he prepares to return Monday on the National Intel Report. And I'm going to welcome now our guest, Nafiz Mossadegh Ahmed, the War on Truth. Hello there.
Hi there, Rick.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Very well. You're in England now, and it's pretty late at night, I guess, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. It's just after 10 p.m. here. Mm-hmm.
Any bombs going off in London tonight?
Not right now, no, thank God. But
right now.
There's always a lot of scares, bomb scares going on regularly.
Been a lot of tumult there, and you have been in and out of the country. You've come to America quite often, and you are only a young man, I guess. What are you, 27 or 28?
I'm 26. I'll be 27 this coming November.
And you are originally a native of what, Bangladesh?
Well, I'm a native of England. I was born here, but ethnically I am from Bangladesh. Yeah.
Okay, very well. Now you have been writing a number of books, and this is what, your third book or fourth?
That's right. It's my third.
Okay. And what possessed you first of all, Nafiz, to get involved in the subject, and particularly 9/11? What made you decide to write your own version and your own book on this critical issue?
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, when I first started out writing on the subject, I never intended to write a book. It was really just my own personal kind of questions that I was asking. I'd read a number of reports in the aftermath of, I think about 3 months after 9/11, I was reading some interesting reports by a number of writers. One of them, some of them are well known. One of them is, his name is Michel Chossudovsky. He's a Canadian professor of economics at the University of Ottawa.
Right.
And he was writing about Al-Qaeda and some interesting connections between Al-Qaeda and U.S. military intelligence services in the Balkans, which kind of really made me ask some big questions about our relationship to Al-Qaeda. And I read some other interesting reports by Michael Rupert, the former LAPD narcotics detective, who was talking about the kind of the put options that were placed on American Airlines, United Airlines, and other key kind of financial entities prior to 9/11, which suggested somebody had some kind of advanced warning of the attacks. And a number of reports of that nature, which really made me kind of interested in the subject and kind of wondering about the kind of lack of information that was coming out from official sources. So I started digging, doing more research. And in the end, I mean, the amount of material that I was putting together was just so huge and so kind of formidable in its implications that it turned into a book kind of just on its own. So here I am.
Yeah. Now, in your book, you do have a number of endorsements. One of them comes from someone who served in the U.S. Air Force, retired Robert Bowman, Lieutenant Colonel, and he was the former director of the Advanced Space Program Development, known as Star Wars, Air Force Space Division under Presidents Ford and Carter. And basically, what he says is interesting in itself. He says of your book, "The War on Truth is a monumental work of breathtaking scope and detail, copiously documented. This book puts 9/11 in its historical context and shows that the American people have been subject to a massive disinformation campaign. Every American interested in politics, history, and truth should read it. Of all the possible conspiracy theories about 9/11, the most unbelievable of all is the official conspiracy theory about Osama bin Laden and 19 fanatic Muslim hijackers taking the government of the United States completely by surprise and getting, quote, lucky, unquote." And he goes on, "I think that sums up, Nafis, the feelings of many who listen to me, many who listen to this program and this network, who have, shall we say, inquisitive minds, minds that can put two and two together and get four when the media are telling us it's really five. So we question, and we put the pieces of the puzzle together, and sure enough, I agree with the general, and I agree with you, having read most of your book, that there is absolutely no way that this whole operation that took place in the United States on 9/11 could have been the result of planning and execution by this so-called Al-Qaeda network. It had to have been done, at the very least, with a lot of inside help. And basically, you confirm that in your book from official government documents."
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I've consistently tried to do is make sure that my sources are reliable, credible. I've tried to cross-reference my sources, and I completely stay away from theorizing unnecessarily. I just take the facts and let the facts speak for themselves. And the facts are quite damning. Every element of the official story that has been given to us falls apart on the merest, tiniest amount of scrutiny. I mean, just on the issue, for example, of the hijackers that Dr. Bowman points out, as you look at the conduct of the hijackers, who these people were, they didn't act in any way what you would describe as a kind of normal kind of Islamic fundamentalist kind of behavior. These people were drinking alcohol. They were gambling. They were going to strip clubs, lap dancing. They were smoking cocaine. They were doing all kinds of things that you ask anybody who knows the slightest thing about Islam is completely at odds with basic Islamic precepts. And It's very difficult to understand who these people were. Were these people connected to Al-Qaeda? What was the nature of their cell? And it's interesting because if you look at what Al-Qaeda is traditionally supposed to be, it's a kind of like a, it's an extremist strand of what is known as Salafism, or Wahhabism, which originated in Saudi Arabia, a very kind of extremist, strict sect of thought, which, you know, you have to abide by certain kind of Puritan principles, and unless, if you don't do that, you're considered a heretic, you're outside the bounds of Islam, and essentially you do not belong in the fold of the religion.
Mm-hmm.
So considering that that is what Al-Qaeda's philosophy is traditionally supposed to be, who were these people? They didn't seem to fit that picture, and at the same time, we find that these people were, according to a number of reports that emerged after 9/11, from Newsweek, from Night Ridden News Service, and many other sources, that these people were training in multiple U.S. military military facilities within the United States in different capacities. Mohammed Atta was training at one school. Another guy, Saeed Al-Ghamdi, was training at Pensacola Air Force Base, and so on and so forth. And so the question really needs to be asked is, how did these people, many of whom were simultaneously on terrorist watch lists held by the State Department, permitted to somehow get high-level security clearance to train in U.S. military facilities, and at the same time didn't conduct themselves in any way what you would describe as traditionally Islamic? Mm-hmm. What was going on here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just some of the inconsistencies and illogics of the whole system. Now, the way the government officials and the media in our country have explained all of this is that it was all a failure. They kept using the word failure. Failure of intelligence, lack of communications between FBI, CIA, so on and so forth. And this was the official excuse, after which they told us the only solution would be to consolidate these agencies, bring them closer together, and add about another $20 billion to the budget. Somehow we just didn't have enough money being spent with the NSA and all of the other agencies that were supposed to be protecting us. So if anything we learned from 9/11 is that we needed more government. We needed more intelligence. We needed more spying. We needed more cooperation. And yes, Americans needed to give up a little bit more of their freedom so the government could make us safe. Basically, that's what they told us. And let's accept this program. No questions asked. In fact, George Bush already had the Patriot Act, as you know. Former Attorney General had it right in his hands, even though, of course, it had been written essentially 9 months before the attack at Pratt House in New York. And, you know, we were told, hey, here's a good blueprint. Let's have the so-called Patriot Act.
Yeah.
And this was just the beginning of a police state in America today. And I see this resulting in a police state. And I see in England now, where you reside, essentially the same things happening, the same parallels. Tony Blair mouthing off with a froth, a foam of hatred and venom and almost hysterical attacks on Al-Qaeda and all of this, while people like Robert Fisk and The Independent have shown that, hey, you know, all Tony Blair has been doing is bombing Iraq with the United States for the past decade and a half. And he's talking about violence, he's talking about terror. You know, it's almost like it's a freak show, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
We're going to invite people to call because the break is coming up and like to have your input, ladies and gentlemen, and speak directly with the author of The War on Truth and author of two other books. And this book, of course, deals specifically with 9/11, disinformation, and the anatomy of terrorism. Nafiz Mossadegh Ahmed, and I'm Rick Adams, filling in for John Stadtmiller again today on this Friday. And we are going to entertain your calls, 800-313-9443. That's the number, toll free now. From anywhere, 800-313-9443. Don't be shy. Get on the line now. I know you have a lot of questions, as I do, for this author who has a lot of information in this book. And you can go online and take a peek at it right now. We shall return. Rick Adams For John Stadtmiller on the National Intel Report. We must take
Introducing the world's best air purifier, the Aeronizer. The Aeronizer produces high levels of activated oxygen right from the air you're breathing. It works the way nature does. It's so powerful it kills molds and mildews, as well as bacteria and viruses in the air and on the surfaces in your home. Made in the USA of the finest materials with an unconditional 2-year warranty. Call 877-605-9200 or visit the website at www.aeronair.us.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Why continue to suffer from pain, illness, and disease when natural health and wellness therapies are within your reach? Hundreds of people report improved health and wellness using Rife frequency technology. In the 1920s, research scientist Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease organisms can be destroyed using resonant frequencies. The BioSolution frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions, and there are no side effects. Join others in discovering a return to natural health and wellness. Eliminate the cause. Don't just treat the symptoms. BioSolutions has over 550 pre-programmed auto sequences for various health conditions and is very easy to use. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. For more information, call Alternative Technologies toll-free at 866-885-6625. That's 866-885-6625. One more time, that's 866-885-6625.
Available from the Republic Broadcasting Network. Broadcasting Network. Broadcasting.
Now you have the time to review every spoken word
on any RBN program
by ordering CDs of any broadcast in either standard audio or MP3 format. Audio CDs are just $10 per hour.
$15 for 2 hours.
And $7 when you order 3 or more hours. An entire month of your favorite broadcaster in MP3 format for just $20. So order right Republic Broadcasting. 1015 South Mays. Suite 100, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. That address again is Republic Broadcasting, 1015 South Mays, Suite 100, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Or for more information, call 1-800-724-2719.
And on the web at rbnlive.com.
Order your CDs today because you can handle the truth.
All right, we're back on the National Intel Report on Republic Broadcasting Network. Rick Adams filling in for John Stadtmiller, our guest, Nafiz Mossadegh Ahmed. And, Nafiz, I have a lot of other questions, things that you bring up in the book, some of which I am familiar with, some I am not. But sure. I think I will defer to our phone callers. Are you ready? All right, 800-313-9443, and any question or comment, agreement, disagreement, we welcome it all here because this is true talk radio. And let's go to Gene in Texas. Hello, Gene.
Hello, Rick. I'm an amateur detective, and to me, 9/11 was not an act of war by any country, of course. It was an international crime. And it needs to be investigated as an international crime, not an act of war by one country against another country. Mm-hmm. And who benefits from the crime is usually the person or persons that did the crime. This is true whether you're dealing with a local murder or whether you're dealing with an international crime such as 9/11. Now, who benefited? Well, right before 9/11, in August of 2001, the United Nations, meeting in Johannesburg, South Africa, declared Israeli to be a racist Zionist country. This is what the Arabs had been trying to do. They've been trying to get public opinion on their side for their own to get a Palestinian country over there in the Middle East. The worst thing that could have turned public opinion against the Arabs and delay them having a country over there, delay the negotiations with the Israeli government who's trying to keep them from having a country, was 9/11. So why would the Arabs do something that would turn public opinion against them and against their purposes in the Middle East and in the world to have public recognition for them to have a country there in the Middle East?
Well, Gene, you bring up an interesting point because our guest, Nafiz, was there, I believe, at that conference and involved in that resolution, I believe. Was that not true?
Yeah, I mean, I was tenuously involved. I was a delegate, an NGO delegate with a number of NGOs, and I had actually presented a paper on apartheid within the Israeli regime. I don't know to what extent that influenced the outcome of the resolution. There were a lot of presenters there. But there was a
big, big crescendo at the time. I remember Secretary of State Powell, the government, the entire Bush administration frantically trying to kill that resolution, frantically trying to protect Israel. And there was a tremendous momentum building up. I mean, the Intifada was going on, killings every day. Wasn't that the case?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there is certainly that historical context. I think what Gene's pointed out is a very interesting issue, the question of who benefits. And it's interesting to know that if you look at who benefits, it is very clearly the neoconservative faction within a certain clique within the United States, and not just in the United States, also internationally, including Israel and a number of other states. And what's interesting for me, I mean, if you look at, for example, the background before 9/11, the kind of strategic planning that was going on. I mean, before and after 9/11, what happened in the aftermath of 9/11, every element of the war on terror as a strategy was laid out years before 9/11 in intricate detail. And, I mean, I'm sure your listeners are aware of PNAC, Project for the New American Century.
We're well aware of this.
Yeah, I mean, you're more than aware that these people connected fundamentally to this Bush administration had intricate plans to invade Iraq. They talked about Syria, North Korea. They talked about hijacking the UN to get their way, using Britain as a kind of mouthpiece to get the message across, and so on and so forth. Every intricate element of the plan was there. But most interestingly, and something which is not always noticed by people, is an interesting comment within the report. And remember, this was published in September 2000, and the report stated that, the specific report was called Rebuilding America's Defenses, and it stated that, you know, in order to implement this strategy of a drastic transformation of kind of the national security apparatus in the United States is required. This would normally take a very, very long time, a very arduous process, unless some kind of catastrophic and catalyzing event, such as a Pearl Harbor-style attack on the United States, occurred.
Yes.
So there was very clearly a recognition, whatever one said, within elements of the U.S. government, that an attack like this would justify this kind of strategy. And Brzezinski, as I mentioned in the book, the former National Security Council advisor, with his Council on Foreign Relations study, the Grand Chessboard, said almost precisely the same thing. That, you know, again, he laid out in intricate detail in 1997 a geostrategy for the control of Eurasia. And again, we could see the step-by-step logic that he laid out being implemented after 9/11. He highlighted the role of Afghanistan, the central importance of Central Asia as a lever of control of Eurasia, and Eurasia itself as an instrument of global control. And then, again, he said, you know, but doing this, getting involved in Eurasia, would not be possible militarily without conceivably a Pearl Harbor-style attack.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, just one more item right
here. Yeah, we're going to break. Go ahead,
all
quickly.
Right. the 9/11 to me resulted in more heroin poppy growing in Afghanistan, more taking out Israeli's main enemy Saddam Hussein there in Iraq, getting off of the oil companies, and increasing the global government tyranny that we call the world order.
Sure, now, looks
to me,
sure
those
looks
people were behind 9/11.
Okay, we've got to get back to the program. We'll be right back after this break. I'm Rick Adams.
Listening to Real Talk Radio, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
You bathe, right? And those dishes and laundry, you wash them, right? If you don't worry. Otherwise, you might want to listen. Your family is exposed to harsh chemicals daily. Chlorides, ethanols, sulfates. They're used in paint thinner, solvents, fuel additives. You'll find those chemical cocktails and more in everyday detergents and shampoo. Does that bother you? It bothers the folks at Calben Pure Soaps. For 58 years, they've produced all-natural, earth-friendly soaps and household cleaners. No animal testing, no chemicals, no dye, no antibacterials. Just safe, natural plant extracts like extra virgin cocoa butter oils and vegetable protein oils. I don't use anything but triple concentrated Calben Pure Soaps. What are you waiting for? Call them 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog. Nothing to lose but the chemicals. 1-800-340-7091 or visit CalbenPureSoap.com.
Can you grow your own nutrition on a shelf indoors in 10 days? Wheatgrass juice is live superfood, the richest nutritional liquid known to man, packed with amino acids, living enzymes, and over 100 elements. 2 ounces of juice have the same nutrition as 3 pounds of choice garden produce. Call 1-877-699-4328. That's 1-877-MY-WHEAT. The stamina, healing, blood building, weight control, and cleansing are just the beginnings of what you will reap from pennies worth of grain. For the book, seed, and the beautiful stainless steel hand crank wheatgrass juicer for $150 plus shipping. No monthly pills, no monthly bills. This is real self-sufficiency. Go to AustinWheatgrass.com or call toll-free 1-877-MY-WHEAT. That's 1-877-699-4328. And thank you for your support of our labors and of the RBN Network.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49. Call AFP toll-free 888-699-NEWS or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Tuned in to the National Intel Report, the Real Talk Radio Show.
All righty, we're back again. And our guest is Nafiz Mossadegh Ahmed, and his latest book, The War on Truth, 9/11 Disinformation and the Anatomy of Terrorism. In your book, you know, it just so happens, Nafiz, that when you deal with the question of laying the groundwork for geopolitics from the neocons' viewpoint in Washington in the Middle East, that it just so happens that Dick Cheney plays quite prominently here in this bunch of neocons. And one of his companies that, of course, he was deeply involved with is a company called Unocol, right?
I don't think Dick Cheney was directly involved with Unocol.
Well, one of his minions, I guess, was and that was the present president of Afghanistan.
That's right.
Yeah, that happens to be a good friend of ours, huh?
Yeah.
What's his name again?
Hamid Karzai.
Hamid Karzai Kazoo? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, he was with Unocol. Dick Cheney did have a lot of interface with Unocol and, of course, the Bushes as well, from what we're told, at least. And it just so happens that when they turned around to pick a leader after the Taliban had been dethroned, it happened to be Mr. Karzai. And I find that to be quite interesting, because that in itself speaks reams about the kind of oil oligopoly interests in the Middle East and the tie to the Bushes and the Bush family, as well as the Saudi royal family. I think there's an interesting linkage there that you touch on in your book.
Yes, absolutely. You find, looking at the history of our involvement in the region and our history of our relations with al-Qaeda, their oil and access to oil and gas resources is such a fundamental motivation. It seems to override everything else. And one of the themes of the book is how, I mean, conventionally we kind of are supposed to have disengaged from al-Qaeda after the Cold War. And what I argue is that, well, if you actually look at the factual record, it's completely not true. Even within Afghanistan itself, we continue to connect with al-Qaeda throughout the post-Cold War period. And, I mean, the evidence is shocking. You have, since 1996, at the very least, Osama bin Laden kind of had the blessings of the Pakistani ISI, Military Intelligence Services, and kind of with their blessing, with Saudi blessing, moved into Afghanistan and kind of officially allied himself with the Taliban. So at least since 1996, the Taliban and al-Qaeda were interpenetrated. Despite that, I mean, we have people like Congressman Dana Rohrabeck coming out in congressional hearings in the late 90s complaining that, you know, we have evidence. He has evidence. And he's writing to say, you know, Secretary of State Madeleine Albright at that time and other officials and saying that, look, the Pakistani ISI, with the CIA support, has been funneling military assistance to the Taliban. We're supporting the Taliban, and we're doing this, according to Rohrabacher, to establish a pipeline route going through Afghanistan to the Caspian Basin, where there are a certain amount of untapped oil and gas reserves. Mm-hmm. And Afghanistan is like the prime transshipment route to secure this kind of access. And the Taliban was perceived as a kind of a way of achieving the required stability that would protect this pipeline route. And ultimately, it didn't quite work out. If you look at the record, I think by the year 2000, the Bush administration seemed to kind of wake up and think, well, this isn't working. The Taliban is not providing security. Mm-hmm. The conflict is continuing and the violence is continuing. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should kind of change our strategy.
Yes.
But the important point to note, we have experts like Ahmed Rashid, who writes for the London Telegraph and the Far Eastern Economic Review, saying that U.S. taxpayers were paying the salary of Taliban officials in 1999, the entire salary. And these people, we have to remember, were interpenetrated with al-Qaeda. So when the 1998 attack on the U.S. embassies occurred, that was with U.S. taxpayer money. Do you understand? That's the significance of the liaison.
And then we have the reports now that the CIA was meeting with Osama bin Laden, even after the attack of 9/11, you know, in Europe. And, of course, George Bush, when he was governor of Texas in the mid-90s, as you basically are intimating, that he sat down himself with certain people from the Taliban government in Afghanistan. And he was attempting to work out some sort of agreement whereby they could control the problem of interference with the oils and the pipeline. And of course, they said flat out they could not guarantee it. And from that point on, George Bush, aiming to become president, putting together this entourage of neocons and so forth, were planning to do just that, make sure they could do what the Taliban could not. And you recall, I'm sure, Here in America, we were bombarded nightly in the mid to late 90s with images from NBC, CBS, ABC of the Taliban destroying and blowing up statues and getting this image already inculcated in our minds that the Taliban was a ruthless terrorist group of band of extremists. So we were being conditioned even then, as I see it. And I remarkably, you know, made these statements when I was doing a local radio program. I said, there's something brewing here. And I said, you watch what happens. When the time comes, the Taliban will be blamed for something that happens and they will be eliminated. Now, of course, the previous caller also touched on the heroin traffic and the poppies and so forth, Poppy Bush, you know. And of course, that is true. It was reported widely. The Taliban did have much of that drug problem under control because they were using the death penalty quite frequently, obviously. As soon as 9/11 and the bombing of Afghanistan, what happened to the drug traffic in Afghanistan?
Well, we had the once the Northern Alliance were installed as the kind of the new kind of puppet regime in the country, I think that literally the heroin production quadrupled, and that heroin is being funneled to the doorstep of the West, the United States, Britain, and Europe.
Yes.
And these guys are of course these are our allies.
Absolutely. It's comical if it wasn't so tragic. Let's take more calls. 800-313-9443. That's the magic number. 800-313-9443. Rick Adams, Radio Avenger, filling in on the John Stapmiller program today, the National Intel Report. And let's talk to Roger in Pennsylvania. Hello, Roger.
Yes, hi, gentlemen. Thanks. And I'm asking the fees first. Since you're dripping with all those highfalutin credentials, I guess it won't be any day now till you're invited on with Fareed Zakaria on the PBS Commie Channel. Or might your cogency quotient be a little too high for that pre-cooked venue?
Well, actually, I was fortunate enough when I arrived. I actually went to D.C. last week to participate. I mean, mainly to do a little bit of publicity for the book. And I participated in a congressional hearing sponsored by Cynthia McKinney and Raul Grijalva on 9/11, which is actually quite a valuable kind of event. But prior to that, when the first day I arrived, we had arranged an interview with Fareed Zakaria on PBS Foreign Exchange, and I did the interview, and I was actually told beforehand by one of the producers or co-producers that, you know, we're going to try and focus on London, and we'll mention your book, we'll plug your book, but we're going to focus on some other things. But, well, luckily enough for me, I mean, the war on truth, I had actually discussed some of the bizarre connections to terrorists that we have here in London. So I was able to bring a lot of that out, and that's going to be aired on the 11th August, I believe.
That's interesting.
Oh, okay. Could I ask, now we could well have a clash of civilizations of sort from natural causes, not one that's contrived, in other words. We had sort of had one 300-400 years ago in Europe, and then America had its own business with the Barbary pirates, etc. But we have had relative calm. And then it's the neocons' job to create this clash where none need not exist, of course. And I'm thinking with the business, with the flagging support in Britain and the U.S. for the war, I'm thinking, it's somehow in the interest of the Islamic radicals to say to themselves, gee, rather than just killing off Americans and Brits on Islamic home turf like in Iraq, what can we do to gin up popular support both in Britain and America against our cause?
Look, I mean, I just don't buy this kind of classic civilizations paradigm. I mean, if we remember this, I mean, as a theory, this originated from Samuel Huntington, who has a pretty interesting record. I mean, this was the guy who, at the time of Vietnam, wrote the book called The Crisis of Democracy, in which he described the kind of, you know, the growing anti-war movement, the fact that people were coming out on the streets in huge numbers and demonstrating and saying that we don't want this war, this is not our war. That was considered a crisis of democracy. In other words, democracy basically when it goes against the wishes of the elite. And so this guy, he's well known, he's interconnected with the kind of elite establishment and the kind of those policy-making circles. And of course, it's very closely allied to the kind of neoconservative clique. And as a theory, the classic civilizations paradigm doesn't actually explain why we have consistently allied ourselves with the kind of with the so-called enemy out there. This is one of the phenomena that I discuss in the book, that in major strategic regions of the world, as Rick Adams kindly read out from the book, you know, in the Middle East, in the Asia Pacific, in Central Asia, and so on and so forth, North Africa, you find that we systematically ally ourselves with states that we know are harboring al-Qaeda and financing al-Qaeda, and we ourselves are piling in military and financial aid to these states, and that aid is going to this domestic terrorist group, which is manipulated by the state, connected to al-Qaeda. And so, in a way, we're almost directly linking ourselves up to the enemy. And there are so many interesting examples of this. If we go back to London, in 1996, one of the key examples I discuss is how the British government paid £100,000 to an al-Qaeda cell in Libya to assassinate Colonel Gaddafi. And this isn't something that can be questioned anymore. This came out in the British press. It was a big scandal by a former MI5 counter-terrorist officer by the name of David Shaler.
I'm reading him right now, as a matter of fact, yes.
Yeah, and it was an absolute scandal at the time. And this guy was courageous enough because he breached the Official Secrets Act and was subsequently prosecuted by the British government, saying that, you know, you breached national security, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And he actually did time, the poor guy, in prison for a few months. But the fact is, the government's response actually proved that this guy wasn't just making it up. He was actually telling the truth. This was an actual secret of the government. And what most disturbingly, that this al-Qaeda cell, one of the members of this cell, was a guy named Anas al-Libi, and he's on the FBI's most wanted terrorist list. He's been indicted as a conspirator in the 1998 U.S. embassy bombings. He's got, you know, several million dollars on his head, and yet he was being paid by the government to carry out this attack, which actually went wrong and killed six Libyan innocent civilians rather than Colonel Gaddafi. So when you look at this kind of history and you think, well, we have some kind of, we've actually used al-Qaeda as an intelligence asset in the past, you know, after the Cold War, when these guys are supposed to be our arch enemies, this fundamentally challenges the whole paradigm of a so-called clash of civilizations, or a war on terror, or now they're talking about a struggle against extremism. Well, why are we using these people then if they really are our enemies? You don't make friends with your enemies, and you don't pay them £100,000 to carry out a covert operation.
Yeah.
And the question then remains, how many times have we done this? How systematically and how many other regions have we done the same thing?
And
did we do
purpose?
It on 9/11? Or
and for what purpose, by the way, I might add, Nafis?
Could you also speak to what to me doesn't wash is these ostensible Islamic terrorists, like I said, the support against the general populace, the attacks, when are they like so stupid, like the gang that couldn't shoot straight, that they wouldn't instead fly into or bomb the headquarters of the Illuminati's who are ending up the war?
Right. Or the ADL headquarters or the Federal Reserve Bank or any of these other great institutions. They go for civilians, allegedly, knowing that would turn the West against them and have their countries invaded further. I mean, it doesn't add up from their point of view. Certainly it doesn't, at least in my world of logic.
Yes. It's a very interesting point. I mean,
it doesn't make sense.
It's pretty clear that these attacks, these terrible atrocities, are essentially being used to justify further more militarization, more domestic repression, more violation of our civil rights, you know, and more aggressiveness abroad, which only fuels more terrorism. And in what sense can you perceive this to be in the interests of the supposed terror is. It's, it's very difficult to discern.
Indeed. Roger, thank you for your call. Appreciate it. And just, of course, today, you know, the report of yesterday's conviction of the Yemeni cleric, who's now facing 75 years, and again, another FBI sting operation, which nabbed him in the first place. And we're talking about the Hamas group, which Israel was instrumental in creating and financing in the first place.
Yeah.
So, you know, here we go again, ring around the rosy. You know, we're chasing the dog, and he's chasing his tail around and around and around. And yeah. I think that's a good analogy. We've got more callers, and you can stay with us at least till the end of the hour, can you, Nafis?
Yes, sure.
Okay, great. Then you stay with us because we got a break coming up. And to our listeners, we will be with you next, John and others, 800-313-9443. I'm Rick Adams, of course, Radio Avenger, the Paul Revere of talk radio, trying to sound the alarm of impending doom unless we begin to wake up to what's happening. Filling in for John Stadtmiller, John will be back Monday, God willing, on these microphones on the National Intel Report. Our guest again, Nafis Mossadegh Ahmed, and he will be with us for just a few more minutes or maybe into the second hour, depending on his schedule. So you stay with us, and I promise you, we won't dilly-dally. We'll put your call right on the air when we return.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Why continue to suffer from pain, illness, and disease when natural health and wellness therapies are within your reach? Hundreds of people report improved health and wellness using Rife frequency technology. In the 1920s, research scientist Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease organisms can be destroyed using resonant frequencies. The BioSolution frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions, and there are no side effects. Join others in discovering a return to natural health and wellness. Eliminate the cause. Don't just treat the symptoms. BioSolutions has over 550 pre-programmed auto sequences for various health conditions and is very easy to use. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. For more information, call Alternative Technologies toll-free at 866-885-6625. That's 866-885-6625. One more time, that's 866-885-6625.
Stay connected to what's happening at the Republic Broadcasting Network by visiting our website,
www.rbnlive.com.
At rbnlive.com, you'll stay up to date with our latest broadcast schedule, learn about upcoming events, read about our air personalities, the programs they host, take part in discussion forums, read the latest breaking news, and listen to RBN programs on your computer by connecting to our live broadcast stream. Plus, you can download previous RBN programs from the archive completely free of charge. That's right. Unlike other services, there is no charge to download programs from the RBN archive. Share them freely with others who are not yet listeners to the Republic Broadcasting Network and help spread the word. We're taking America back through the power of information. Stay connected to the Republic Broadcasting Network and our website, rbnlive.com.
are back. Rick Adams filling in for John Stadtmiller. This is the National Intel Report on the Republic Broadcasting Network, rbnlive.com. Before we take another call, though, let me also ask you, Nafiz, what's the best way people can get a hold of your book, The War on Truth?
Well, there's a number of ways. I mean, probably the best, you can order it directly from the publisher at www.interlinkbooks.com. If you go to that website, you'll be able to get phone numbers, and you can also order it online.
That was my next question. Your website?
My website, the Institute website, is www.globalresearch.org.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be redesigned and reconstructed. It needs a fair amount of work.
Exactly. And by the way, because the phone connection, of course, is not perfect, let me just say through my microphone that the publisher is Interlink Books, and that's www.interlinkbooks.com, right?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, very good. Now, let's take John in Tennessee. John, you're on the program with our guest, Nafiz.
Thank you, Rick. You know, my call is probably a little bit off topic, but I hope that you'll bear with me. I know that we have problems in our government. I have problems for your guest. Is it Nafiz?
Nafiz, yes.
Okay, yeah. I hope I pronounced it correctly. I know that there's problems in your country. I find it really hard to believe, Rick, that everyone in our government is some sort of a evil conspirator. I know that there are those that are in a position of power that have, they know where they came from, they know where they want to take us, and they know where we are right now.
Mm-hmm.
They know where in their agenda, you know, they've got backup plans and all the rest of it. What I'd like to say to the average person out there is you can have a very concise, detailed map of the world with the greatest detail that your mind can imagine. And if you don't know where you are, you may know where you want to go, but you have no point of reference from which to start. So, you know, I hope I'm making myself clear, but if we know where we want to take our nation, or we know where we want to wind up when our days are over, we have to know where we are now. We've got to have a compass, a moral compass.
And where are we now in your view, John?
Well, in my view?
Yeah.
If you really want to know, Rick, we're in the last days.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see much good coming out. And believe me, I'm the guy that if you see someone crying when the flag is raised, or you see someone picking a car flag up off the side of the road, that's me. I love this country, and I want the best for it.
I think we all do. We all do, yes.
I really don't hold that a lot of hope for where this country or any other country in the world is going, given the events that are taking place right now.
Yeah, we can get into prophecy, but we won't here on this program.
Well,
we talk about it quite a bit.
Well, I understand, Rick, and I'm not trying to get into prophecy.
No. I understand where you're coming from. It is a very serious situation because we've got...
Take the religious aspect out of it, Rick.
Sure.
Even the most moral person,
yes,
if they want to go somewhere, they have to know where they are.
That's right.
Whether it's morally or ethically.
It all starts with you, the individual, John.
It absolutely does.
And I know what you're saying.
We've got people that have given themselves over to attaining wealth or attaining power or position. And until we get that straightened out in a person's heart.
Sure.
And I think, Rick, that's, you know, I don't like when
John, we have to break. We're up against the clock. Thank you for your call, though. I appreciate it. Can you stay with us, or do you have to run, Nafiz?
I can stay with you, Rick.
All right, stay a few more minutes. We'll be right back on the National Intel Report. Rick Adams, stay tuned.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Americans who own guns, people like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year. Get the facts on gun control. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
You're listening to RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.